We are back for episode 270. So we've have enough 270. So now we can be elected president. 270, isn't that the threshold, electoral college?
Exactly right.
We're at 270. And I
imagine, yeah, we should throw our hat into the ring, Tim. I think we have a really reasonable chance. So.
270. So episode 270. Well, this week, one thing, the first topic I guess we can talk about is this. The court is dealing with the issue of affirmative action yet again. They've done this a number of times throughout history. I think the most well-known case is the Bakken case back in 1978, which said overt affirmative action was unconstitutional, but you can have goals or something if you racial consideration, race was one of many considerations for admissions into schools. In this case, it was a medical college. They are considering this case. I think it deals with North Carolina and Harvard University. And basically, it's a discrimination against white folk and Asians, I guess, in favor of African Americans and I guess Hispanics or any other, I guess, marginalized group they could throw in there, person of color, people of color, whatever. However, the political left is determined to defend affirmative action to build diverse student bodies as a legitimate claim. They claim it actually adds to the educational experience by lowering standards. I don't understand that reasoning. But I guess it's a subjective standard. The same way they claim that diversity helps the military or helps police force by lowering standards by increasing the representation of various ethnic groups into these institutions. Again, the presumption is that diversity is our strength. That's, of course, a motto or phrase coined by the Anti-Defamation League. Diversity is their strength. Nevertheless, the Supreme Court justice on Monday seemed to be skeptical about the claim. The conservative justices asked many questions. Such that what's the end point of this? Because that was always the idea with affirmative action. There's got to be end point. It's got to end sometime. That's what Justice, I think, O'Connor said back in the 80s in one of the cases. When does it end? And they were saying, well, 20 years. It's always 20 years, 20 years. But you have this stubborn thing where you have inequality. You don't have egalitarianism. People, groups are different. There's group performances that are involved. It may factor into certain genetic qualities, cultural, just preferences. Nevertheless, in a free society, in a genuinely free society, you're not going to get equality, especially society, which seems to have a fetish with immigration, because you're always going to have an underclass, if you will, a helot class, a laboring class, and you're never going to get equal representation. And of course, it goes into the complexity of various ethnic groups, East Asians, versus Europeans, or versus Blacks or Hispanics. So really, this stems from this cult of equality that's been around probably since the Civil Rights era. The idea if you did away with overt discrimination laws like Jim Crow laws and these things, you'd get equality. Well, that isn't the case. And I think honest people knew that wouldn't be the case. But nevertheless, I think it was the Civil Rights laws, Hubert Humphrey said there was nothing overt in the law that mandated quotas or affirmative action. He said if you could find something in the law that calls for this, he'd eat the law. He'd stuff the paper in his mouth and eat it. And you couldn't point for anything specific, but nevertheless, the way the law was interpreted by the court since then was that if you had a statistical disparity or underrepresentation of a certain ethnic group, it was a considered prima facie case for discrimination. And you could sue on that basis. The institution presumed to practice discrimination, or if you had disparate impact, you could have objective standards, but if it disparately impacted a certain group, let's say a requirement for a high school degree, if it disparately impacted a certain group, because one group had a higher high school dropout rate, that was considered discrimination. So effectively you did get a racial quota system going, or affirmative action, to address past grievances, which is sort of a morally suspect claim, but to bring about equality. So effectively, the federal government was allowed to impose quota systems to address those imbalances or perceived imbalances. Again, all based on a presumption of equality, which, again, why does that exist? So we have this problem with affirmative action. You have a lot of one important point before I end here, let you get in here, is that affirmative action has never been politically popular. In fact, to the extent that it's been questioned, the ballot box, it's been overwhelmingly defeated. I think most recently in California, in the late 90s, it was overturned in California. A polyglot state as California overturned affirmative action. It's never been popular. It's usually been a product of bureaucratic decisions, president executive orders, sort of bureaucratic fiat, and sort of judicial rulings in these things. But it seems to be on the chopping block now, which is interesting.
Yeah, I would imagine they'll overturn it. I don't think this will have a lot of effect, unfortunately, at this point, because, bear in mind, as I'm sure you're aware, that the original purpose of the affirmative action thrust was not equality, but subservience. In other words, the idea was to create a multiracial clump that had no ethnic aspect of energy that could resist the Judeo-Masonic political class. I mean, that's really what affirmative action was for. It's what integration was for. I mean, these ideas have a kind of sophistry to support them, right? We've heard it our whole lives. I mean, I have, you know, that this is somehow going to lead to a brave new world, a workers' paradise if we could just integrate enough. But sort of like feminism and the Great Society programs now, 70 years downstream, we actually can compare the workers' paradise they claim was going to occur to what actually happened. And if anyone thinks that affirmative action is going to bring about nirvana, I would just suggest coming with me on a drive through Los Angeles, and I can show you that. I mean, they may have quite a few white people in the fentanyl camp encampments, but they really don't have anything that is comparable to what the elites have in their living circumstances. So segregation has actually become worse. In other words, if you just look at the, economic strata, you'll see that the top 1% has never been further away from the economic reality of the bottom 99%, right? So the whole thing was just to produce what we have now, which is an economic pyramid, which underneath is not, unfortunately, the angles are not sloping toward 45 degrees, they're just straight down. I mean, I also think that they can get rid of affirmative action now because they can work the other side of the street, which is the biological side, both with race mixing, but also with just biological destruction of children. You have the transgender movement, which is just reflecting the biological damage that has been done. And so it's actually, affirmative action at this point, I just see it as kind of a distraction, because the real things that are the most destructive right now are, the medical side of things, which, like the vaccine, which we can now see, certainly like in the pregnancy and birth data in Europe. I mean, they're saying that there's 1 million fewer kids than there should be. Post-vaccine, 1 million. So it's a kind of a birth control. But moreover, obviously, the ones who were born were also damaged, right? So you can imagine that the children of the vaccinated are going to have lower IQs, going to have more neurologic problems, and then they're going to be born into a toxic soup of glyphosate, more vaccines. So that's your affirmative action. In other words, there isn't going to be any advantage or differences between the ethnicities inside that clump. They're all going to be morons. So affirmative action, it's a great kind of issue to politically to have on the table right now, because Tim, we're looking at this election Tuesday, and obviously the more sort of clarity that is given to the public, the more likely you're going to pick up some down ballot changes, which I've, over the last few months, I've been talking about ceaselessly. I mean, it's just such an important thing. But, you know, I think the affirmative action, which of course is unconstitutional and was obviously malevolent, has just been part of the project to lead us to where we are now. And I think going forward, they'll have other ideas.
Yeah, affirmative action has always been understood as being anti-white. Same way civil rights is anti-white. It's, again, you're correct in pointing out, let's denying the advocates of the civil rights regime, if you will, of their sort of their assumption of moral superiority. It has some sophistry to justify it, equality, blah, 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 justice, blah, 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 all that. But really, it was a malevolent agenda, a design, again, to sort of break up the ethnic identity of the of heritage America and render it, I guess, more vulnerable to social engineering and control. And so you deny them that their moral superiority. You're right. You cannot square affirmative action with equality before the law or the 14th Amendment as it is understood, as has been interpreted by the 20th century Supreme Court. When the 14th Amendment was passed, you did have racially segregated schools. That wasn't the original intention of the 14th Amendment, but the subsequent interpretation of the 14th Amendment, its expansive interpretation, the best argument against its ratification, although its ratification was unconstitutional. A lot of contradictions in this stuff. Again, the whole rule of law thing, basically it's just a regime imposing its will, giving it the cover of law, the color of law, and these things. But you can't square it with equality before the law or these things. So now there's someone saying that Harvard, which is a private institution, you could simply get around it by simply refusing government money. Other colleges have done this, like Hillsdale College, to avoid that. But then again, they're not free to discriminate because businesses aren't free to discriminate. You have this public accommodations as part of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and it banned discrimination and things like employment and public accommodation. Now the federal government really had no constitutional jurisdiction to come into the states and tell businesses who they should choose as customers, but they used the public accommodation excuse and interstate commerce to do these things. Cause you know, let's say you get, if you're a burger joint, you get your ketchup from a company that outside the state, you then engage in interstate commerce. This invites all manner of federal regulation and control, because that's a bad faith interpretation. That our founding fathers never would have passed the Interstate Commerce Clause if it was an invitation for, to get around the enumerated powers. Ideally, the federal government only has enumerated powers and the several states have vast powers. That's the original understanding of these things. So there's a contradiction here. But then again, if Harvard can privately discriminate to maintain a racial quota system, then why can't hotels and businesses do the same thing? You know, either one or the other. Harvard could say, hey, this is scrap civil rights and allow for private discrimination, let people choose who they want to associate with. But then again, they're not willing to.
If Harvard can do it, then how about planned communities saying, well, you know, gee, we just want white people.
Yeah, why not that? Or we only want Catholics or something. Yeah.
Different legal or moral distinction. And my point is, Tim, is that when this stuff is rolled out, you know, when you roll out the Great Society programs or affirmative action, you know, there is some rationale. It isn't just, you know, a glorious future with no specific aspects to it. But now we're 70 years in and we can just ask the questions and I'll ask them to you. Like, if you're looking at affirmative action or Great Society, what broad stroke demographic has gotten better?
Yes. You know?
I mean, what really has gone? Has violent crime gone down?
Has it worked?
Has drug use, incarceration? Well, yeah. I mean, what exactly are they trying to promote at this point?
Based on the supposed claims of the civil rights people who advocated civil rights and laws and all these regulations, has it worked? Well, obviously, it hasn't.
Yeah, the only people it's worked for are the people who advocated it, because they've all got affirmative action type jobs. Are now political representatives, are, you know, speakers on CNN or something.
Yeah, or just something, the whole shakedown industry, that it's lawyers, shakedown.
That has worked out, but I don't recall that being presented back at the beginning of the rationale as to where we were going to be heading with the affirmative action regulation. So, I mean, it's just a self-evident.
Yeah, making a bakery, make a cake for a gay couple, a wedding cake for a gay couple. Was that all what they were thinking about in 1964? Perhaps. perhaps.
If you look at the, authoritarian personality science,
yes.
Yeah, they were probably seeing that far down. They were, but this was all undisclosed. You know, what was disclosed was a kind of, in terms of affirmative action, I can't even remember what the arguments were, but it was just, a workers' paradise kind of vision. And now, we actually have data. And so the defense of it, it'll be kind of curious because they sometimes do bring up statistics in the at the Supreme Court. And if this is the case, then there'll be an amazing revelation, I think, to the American public, how the thing has been a total, complete faceplant. It hasn't done anything positive. All of the demographics are worse now than they were in like 1955. So, you can't defend it statistically. You can only defend it in terms of its metaphysical.
Yeah, it's they mystify it. Mystification occurs. How does lowering test score standards? Lowering standards across the board make for a better organization.
I've lost you, brother.
Can you hear me?
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now? How about now?
I've lost you, Tim.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Okay, we're back. So how does lowering all these standards across the board help, an educational mission or a military mission or a fire department? And they really can't demonstrate that. Again, it's this over mystification of this thing. So we'll see. They're going to drop, maybe they'll put it on the chopping block. Again, it's this cult of equality. That's why now they talk about equity instead of equality, because now it's outcome based. And it also ignores other problems. Like if you talk about whether it's income or education or educational performances, simply lowering standards doesn't address that. Just like not enforcing behavioral standards or disciplining bad behavior, encourages the bad behavior. And it doesn't address the other problems, let's say with Blacks, where their biggest problem is probably illegitimacy and sexual misbehavior, which destroys the family and create whatever deficiencies they may or may not have. It doesn't help them if they're growing up in, female held broken homes that, where they're abused and traumatized. And then they're told they're victims and they have something coming to them.
What really makes me sick to my stomach are the faces of Black success, like Lori Lightfoot, Maxine Waters, and they represent, like Lori Lightfoot talking about, well, look at the progress, we have a Black mayor.
Yes.
Okay, so she has benefited, and Maxine Waters, et cetera, et cetera. So you have a class of beneficiaries of the affirmative action programs. They are essentially, in different positions of power and financial success. But did they ever use their bully pulpit to talk about what's going on in the street? I mean, does Lori Lightfoot ever, say, well, it hasn't really worked too well for, South Central Chicago males, has it?
No.
Because are they better off than, they were in 1960? I mean, show me the demographic stroke. Show me, education, lack of violent crime. I mean, what exactly have you done? Because the only way I can view South Chicago at this point is through videos taken by people using drones. I mean, the place is an absolute hellhole. It's sort of collapsing into just a state of perpetual gang warfare. So it hasn't worked out. It just hasn't worked out. And Lori uses her position, her bully pulpit, to just talk about how good it is to be her. But this wasn't, the goals were not to create a idealized media class back in 1960 when the claims were being made. So it's just a total disaster. it can't be defended statistically. You know, it's only held in place at this point by mind control, that it's sort of like an extension of anti-Semitism, where you can't really talk openly about being opposed to affirmative action unless you're prepared to, you know, face the charge of racism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, it hasn't worked because it doesn't address the real problem. It doesn't face, you know, address reality. It's this fantasy. All you can do is just pretend to impose equality. It's sort of a Procrustean vision on this real situation, and you can't cut reality to fit your own ideological vision. And it, as you suggested earlier, the ultimate goal was malevolent. It was there to, you know, good examples, shipping up blacks from the South into Chicago and the Philadelphia. You can say it was integration, but it was really there to bust up the ethnic neighborhoods there and create white flight and these things in the suburbia, which is a whole other area of social engineering. So basically we're dealing with, goes on the broad concept of social engineering. That's the problem with it, whether it's busing or whether it's forced integration or affirmative action. It's all social engineering that, again, that shouldn't be tolerated in a free society.
Well, particularly undisclosed, unelected social engineering that's going mm-hmm. on through nefarious and artificial methods. I mean, if they want to come forward and say, look, this is the world we want to create. These are the ethnic criteria. Okay, do it. But to bring out affirmative action or Great mm-hmm. Society or the Shaft movies. I mean, yeah. They're social engineering, but they always do it with the hidden hand.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So another thing, well, we mentioned a free society, and supposedly free societies have to have elections. We have to have democracy. And we're being told that our democracy is what, on the ballot, and it's at stake. Now, what is meant by that? I think most people looking at the polling is that if the elections are conducted in a free and orderly fashion, that the Democrats are going to get shellacked, as they should, because they're the party in power and they've driven the country into the ground the past 2 years, not just with their policies, but with their rhetoric, with their divide and conquer rhetoric, exasperating racial problems, promoting them. And so now there's talk about our democracy being on the ballot. Max Boot in Washington Post and a column claimed that in order to maintain democracy, you have to vote Democrats, meaning you have to vote for one party rule. Otherwise, we don't have democracy. If you vote for the opposition party, it's democracy. Of course, in America, we think it's either one or the other, right? It's a Tweedledee or Tweedledum, Team A versus Team B, red versus blue, whatever. But nevertheless, now they're claiming that apparently if you vote Republican, sort of a chastisement message to the Democrats, you are actually undermining democracy. And they're saying democracy is on the ballot, sort of a talking point you're saying now. Democracy is on the ballot, democracy is at stake. Of course, if you look at the ballot, democracy is not on the ballot, as Tucker Carlson pointed out. Candidates are on the ballot. It's a process that we choose our representatives in government to supposedly represent us, right? Pass policies or pass laws and these implement policies that represent our values, our preferences. Of course, we know it's much isn't quite that simple. We live in an oligarchy. Democracies are easily captured, particularly liberal democracies, because very few get control of the means of communication, and they can manipulate the flow of information, communication, and even how ballots are counted. And we saw that in 2020, and they're anticipating this. So again, democracy is at stake. All the polls shows that that Republicans will probably take the House, a good bet to take the Senate. I think if it's free, they'll probably take the Senate and the House. That would mean the end of Nancy Pelosi's career, as long as it's been. She's, I think, 82 years old. So I guess it's the time has come.
But Tim, she can go back to a happy domestic life with her husband.
Yes. We've had that situation. This is kind of all the stories blend together, where Mr. DePape, apparently a nudist, anti-war activist, allegedly a male prostitute, homosexual, found his way into Pelosi's home, supposedly has security. Not only that, there's actually Secret Service detail in San Francisco, but he somehow found his way into the home, didn't break in, because I think reported the glass was actually broken outward. So if someone's trying to fake it or something, but the police were there, and when Mr. Pelosi was assaulted by Mr. DePaper with a hammer, he had been there as long as a half hour, at least, I think, before the police came. So we can speculate whether that's appropriate or not, but it's appropriate because they tried to spin this into like a politically motivated attack on Mrs. Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, who happened to be in Europe at the time. They're claiming this was some sort of ham-fisted or kidnapping attempt. So it has sort of the very similar to the Whitmer thing in the fall of 2020, where the FBI claimed it was a kidnapping plot. Turned out it was an FBI plot. But the DOJ apparently has filed kidnapping charges against Mr. DePape. So then we have the spectacle of the criminal justice system, the federal criminal justice system, being exploited to make a political point. Although in no way, if you look at the evidence, doesn't suggest there's any political motivation behind this. It looked like it was something between Mr. DePape and Paul Pelosi, and they've spun it into this thing because they're trying to blame another example of right-wing political violence, although this guy's a leftist. So it doesn't make any sense. It's not getting traction from the public. Everyone's kind of, furring their eyebrow going, what? What are you talking about? But they made a political issue out of it by claiming that this was a product of political violence fostered by the right. Of course, there's no talk about political violence on the left, like the assault on the congressmen and senators in the baseball game in 2017 by a Bernie Sanders supporter. Of course, there's BLM and Antifa. There's all types of examples of political violence carried out by leftists that apparently doesn't mean that the left should be censored, although when something occurs on the right, it doesn't have to be on the right. They just try to spin it as being right-wing motivated. They'll try to make an excuse for censure. Apparently, they're saying the criticism of Speaker Pelosi led to this, so therefore she should be immune from criticism.
Yeah, I mean, you have to scratch your head and wonder if these guys are actually, sort of sense the irony when they make these statements, because let's face it, 99% of the violence in America is driven by leftist political agendas. I mean, how did South Chicago become Mogadishu? Mm-hmm. Do you think this was like the Republicans or MAGA? What about downtown Seattle? Is this a MAGA concept? So this is Orwellian, doublespeak kind of mind control, where everyone is basically trying to get from the department store to their cars in one piece or without getting carjacked. And this is completely because of left-wing, political, malevolence. But that cannot be discussed, whereas this maniac who had a BLM poster and a gay flag on his property, this is obviously, the MAGA agenda, and it's what we all have to be afraid of. So, I mean, it's really, you can't even discuss someone. I mean, if you think about it, like Hillary Clinton's, statement about, this chronic right-wing MAGA agenda that produces a more violent society. It's not really a statement that has any connection to reality. It's just propaganda and political elections.
It's completely divorced from reality. Just like the
there, it's like the violence in our country, no matter how you cut it, has been really brought about by or at least the increases in it since 1950 are all the result of left-wing social policies, which really calling them left-wing social policies is not really correct. It's just the authoritarian personality concept of pushing society into a clump where there's no ethnic energy so that it can't resist being enslaved and vaccinated. That's what we're the victims of.
Yeah, it is interesting to kind of break reality, whether it's Hillary Clinton on MSNBC or some of the MSNBC.
Tim.
Okay, we're back.
Good.
Yeah, it's it's sort of break from reality, whether it's Hillary Clinton on MSNBC or some of the hacks on MSNBC, the talking heads. A good example is the... last week, the Justice Department announced federal charges against David DePape for kidnapping. charges against attempt on Speaker Pelosi. Again, although she wasn't even in the country, there's no evidence to support that. But then again, there's no evidence to support the charge of insurrection, right? Against all the protesters in January 6th, nor there was there a basis for the warrant to raid the Mar-a-Lago home and these things, nor there any basis for arrest pro-life protesters, Christian pro-life protesters by Merrick Garland's Cheka, the FBI. So it's sort of this abuse of the criminal justice system to make a political point. It doesn't have any check on this, so it's complete abuse of power. It's also interesting that the San Francisco field office has been exposed as being involved in this conspiracy with big tech, Silicon Valley, to suppress political speech and suppress information on social media for political purposes. And so these stories all kind of blend together because we're going into an election cycle where, of course, the source of information, what the public knows about various issues, whether it's Hunter Biden's laptop or just the Pelosi thing, or even just issues in general, Ukraine. There was an attempt to suppress information regarding COVID-19, the COVID-19 reaction, the lockdowns, misinformation. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, misinformation, and they call it misinformation. Basically, it's information that the regime doesn't want to get out, or certain people may disagree with. Of course, there is no misinformation really, supposedly, in a democracy, because we debate these things. You don't suppress the information. You don't manipulate algorithms to control information, because they're caught doing. Of course, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, The Intercept had an article about this, how they're all colluding to do this. This is a complete violation of the First Amendment. It's illegal. It's criminal. And people should be prosecuted. There are congressmen talking about impeaching Mayorkas, the head of Department of Homeland Security, and actually passing a law to make it criminal to be engaged in these things. And I would hope that would happen. Now, should the Republicans take the Congress and they're in charge of the committees, let's assume that they take power and they actually want to do something. That's a big assumption. This is for the sake of the argument. What type of hearings should they hold? To investigate the past, 24, 36 months of criminal activity on the part of the left. What would be on your list?
Well, everything. But I mean, a good example of how impossible this is would be the idea of, investigations into malevolence in terms of both the lockdown and the vaccines. I mean, mm-hmm. You would need to have, first of all, the establishment of a truly independent, kind of judicial body. And here is the rub. You can't do that coming out of the Congress. So it's virtually a catch-22. If you look at how both parties would support something as insane as, weapons to the Ukraine, right?
Yes, yeah.
This just shows that, if you're going to have an honest investigation into affirmative action, into vaccine damage, into the suppression of free speech, you have to first of all have literally a political revolution. So this is the problem: is that they have set up the legal system so that we cannot use it to get rid of predators, the political class being the predator. So it's something as we've talked about, we're heading toward a purification, hopefully, and when that occurs, maybe some kind of changes can be made. But I just wanted to point out that with the suppression of information, you really brought out a profound point, which very few people have talked about, is that in a democracy, the idea of suppressing information or misinformation is a non-sequitur. It's impossible. There's no such thing as misinformation. In a democratic process, what you have is clarification of errors, which is done through Socratic debate and discussion, right? So to label a concept as misinformation and remove it, what you're really saying is that the human that the government is dealing with is not to have freedom of thought. Right. This is really what you're talking about, because the government is making the decision that, the individual is not capable of coming to the conclusion we want him to. So we're just going to remove all the information that might lead him away from to this conclusion. But this is the point being here is that they are creating kind of biological robots, slowly but surely, because when they have these forces like Facebook and Google with the algorithms to remove from, you know, the mind of the citizen ideas which they deem or have labeled misinformation, they're really constructing a way of thinking, right? They're constructing a kind of mind, one that they have determined is easy for them to control. This isn't being done with disclosure, just like all the other malevolent elements that we've discussed earlier. This is being done, you know, subterranean, little by little. The technology is in the hands of a few companies that are never, you know, opened up to the vision of the democratic forces. And so it is, we're in a world of not just propaganda, but of the creation of the biological robot. So it's incumbent on the independent media to point this out. And you're just, you know, hats off to you for mentioning it, because so few people are even talking about it.
Yeah, because basically, if we are voting, the information that informs our vote matters. So if you're controlling what people know about, what they should think, and then all this involves a lot of other, you know, whether it's peer press or psychological warfare to control people's thoughts. And of course that's done through entertainment, all types of things, but also just, you know, through allowing what people are able to know. This Intercept piece, which exposes this conspiracy between the Homeland Security and big tech, Silicon Valley, to engage in mass censorship. Because apparently if people are given information and free to discuss these things, it will lead to terrorism. So basically it's a national security issue. Now, of course, what they call misinformation, how do you know it's misinformation? Unless you can scrutinize, ask questions, these things. Of course, as I said, this is illegal. And that's a big thing. And so basically those who are involved in it should be charged, removed from power and charged accordingly. But the article cites a draft copy of, it's called the Quadrennial Homeland Security Review, a DHS document, which now it's claiming that every new story, including the origins of COVID-19 pandemic and the efficacy of COVID-19 vaccines, racial justice, the U.S. withdrawal, retreat from Afghanistan, the nature of U.S. support to the Ukraine needs to be regulated by the government. Now, that's just absurd. These are issues that people need to debate. This is why you have a consensus on these things, because people aren't allowed to debate them in Washington, D.C. or even around the country. Nevertheless, if you can't communicate on social media about these things. Of course, last year, the government attempted to implement, what was it, the Disinformation Board with that wacky Nina Jankowicz. And she was so ridiculous they had to cancel, but it doesn't mean they're going to back off and not do it. Obviously, they showed their hand, right?
I just want to interject Scary Poppins.
Yes.
Did you notice the disclosure that has finally come to light concerning her past, that she had been working with agencies that are subterranean agencies to suppress free speech? I mean, there's just a whole now, you know, the people have gone into her background and you can see why she was picked. But what it's interesting is that she had that really kind of whimsical, comical face to the public with the singing and the rhyming, you know, lyrics and stuff. But then when you go into her background, you can see she's just a 100%, agent of tyranny.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, we do know that, of course, Time Magazine wrote about this, that prior to the 2020 election, the FBI and other government agencies met with Silicon Valley, big tech companies, Twitter, Facebook, Wikipedia, Microsoft, LinkedIn, in order to discuss with them how to fight what they call election disinformation, which basically what that is, that's just another way of saying, how do we control the information to secure Democrats win this election cycle? It's securing the election, as they say. So right now you have the DHS demanding that tech companies silence information that the government happens to just disagree with. Again, the Biden administration has admitted to flagging information on social media they don't want people to see. In fact, Facebook actually created a department for DHS to contact them about information they want removed from the public domain. So they're interfacing with this. So Facebook, these corporations are culpable. They can be sued, bankrupted, broken up, bought out, and that's, you know, it's obviously, and this is why Elon Musk is running into roadblocks, because he might have naively thought that he could promote free speech, but the powers that be are not going to tolerate that. And they're going to, they may give a little bit, but they're simply, they're going to circumscribe or limit what Elon Musk does. Apparently they have been doing. The ADL already met with him, you know, as if the ADL, who is the ADL to talk to anybody, what should be allowed to be discussed, right? So it violates the First Amendment. Again, it gets into this whole election thing, because it is the, what they're really admitting, though, it's kind of a good thing, because what they're admitting is that they let people have access to information and people can freely communicate, the whole system comes crumbling down. So they can't tolerate anything to genuinely free speech. It's just, it shows they can't tolerate it.
Yeah, well, they don't have any anything left in terms of sort of the sophistry, because as we've discussed, all of the programs that they have put into place now have enough track record to be able to vet as failures to achieve what they claim they were going to. And when you go into analyzing them, then, you know, without the pretty face of the workers' paradise, the malevolence, it becomes visible. So it's, they can't discuss these things. I mean, think of like all the things that can't be discussed at this point. It's getting to be like virtually all of reality. I mean, you can't discuss vaccine damage. Where is the media coverage of the vaccine damage now that it's just blatant and completely apparent? What about the missing kids in Europe who weren't conceived, right? Mm-hmm. So there's just the list of kind of things that can be discussed is getting smaller and smaller, and we're just in a world that we have to find, really, Tim, we just have to find other venues that we create, even if it's just social networks among ourselves, which is probably the best thing at this point, to try to, you know, vet information and to get a sense of what's real.
Hey, did you see that Atlantic Magazine, a piece written by Emily Oster about pandemic amnesty? People, basically, we should just forget about everything that's been done because no one knew what they were dealing with. Everyone was in the dark. Well, that's funny because from the get-go, I was very skeptical about social distancing and mask mandates and masking and the science behind that. There are a lot of people raising questions about it, you know, particularly regarding Warp Speed vaccine development. The fact that it really isn't a vaccine, it's gene therapy. A lot of people raising questions. But apparently, according to this academic, she's a BA, PhD, Harvard economics, she's a professor at Brown University. We need to forgive one another for what we did and said when we were in the dark about COVID. So it wasn't like they suppressed free speech. They destroyed the lives of people who had the bravery or the audacity to speak up about these things, ostracized them, throw them out of work, ruin their lives. They're just in the dark and they panic. Just forget about it, move on. Well, how about, no, we don't forget about it. Remove all of you from positions of power or authority and investigate these things. We were mentioning what Congress can do. Well, they could have committee hearings. Again, ideal world, if their Congress was sovereign, actually represented the American people, interest the American people. There was a time when Congress was more representative in the early part of the 20th century. We did have hearings like in the 30s regarding the merchants of death and some of the scandals regarding World War I, the drive to war. I don't think anyone was ever prosecuted, but it was exposed. You know, the Dyes Committee, looking into subversion, that turned into the House Un-American Activities List, House Un-American Activities Committee. Although they went off on a tangent with communism, they were getting into something. Of course, the Reese Committee hearings and their investigation into the great foundations, and they're subverting what they call the American way of life. And that, they understood what that meant back then. We could have similar hearings like that, investigating the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, George Soros's foundations, the Open Society Foundation, bring up DHS people, FBI people, call them to account for their, what we know is illegal. It's, again, it's Chris and the political will to do it. But no, none of this amnesty stuff. We could have a truth of reconciliation where they admit their guilt, I suppose, but they have to admit their guilt. Don't let them get pensions.
Do you think that argument would have worked by a defense attorney at Nuremberg trial?
We're just following orders.
Well, we can all, like, you know, forgive and forget, can't we?
Yeah. Well, that doesn't work because,
you know, and yeah, I just think it's just too ridiculous to even almost respond to.
Well, basically, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say all it does is provide political cover for the fact that none of the needed, investigations are going to occur. They can't. There's no possible way they could do an investigation at this point, because what that would do, it would just expose to the vast majority of the normies that there's vaccine damage that's occurring. And the malevolence would be self-evident, because you'd have experts would come in and go, you know.
It would also open up the whole system, meaning that we don't have sovereignty. We don't have representation. We have oligarchy, these foundations, Johns Hopkins, these medical institutions, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Health Organization, the United Nations organizations, UNICEF, these things. These are all corrupted institutions. They're corrupt from the start. And people have to look at the whole nature of the system we live under. I mean, that's the problem. Even our current economic problems, if you look under the hood, like, whoa, it's like, how do you solve the problem? There are too many internal contradictions, student debt. What about usury and debt in general? What about, the $31 trillion national debt, and the world is awash in $30 trillion of debts and counterparty claims and the whole monetary system. Really, and once you start looking under, you just want to close up and go, let's just ignore it. that's the political response to it.
Yeah, and that's all they can do, because we are at the era of diminishing returns. If any open discussions or discussions, even where, there can be a public kind of inquiry, into this stuff, is all going to lead to a vivid disclosure of the malevolence of the political class. There's nothing they can do. That's why there is no more chance they're going to have kind of public hearings on vaccine damage and the damage from the lockdowns than the CDC was willing to discuss with the Lazarus statistical group about the potential for vax damage from that was causing autism. When we're at the point where they can't talk, they literally cannot say anything. And this is an opportunity, because since they can't talk, since all they can do is close down the arguments with either, technology or with, like ludicrous, like the woman who wrote that article about amnesty for the vaccine.
Well, this is why you get something like the Great Reset being bandied about.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's right. So that's the point, is that when they say the Great Reset, really what they're trying to do is just create a moment in time where everything in the past can be, just intellectually destroyed, so that all we can do is just see the future and we're all moving forward into some direction that they have in mind for us.
I mean, her call here, Emily Oster's plea for pandemic amnesty, is similar to like a plea for historical amnesty from all the crimes. Move on. But it would make sense if those people, if you declare an amnesty and those in power step down. It doesn't make sense to declare an amnesty and keep those in power in place so they can go on with their criminal activity or do it 10 times over with something called a Great Reset or something.
I think she should expand it, and she should entitle her article, "I want to give a list of everything we can't talk about," and then she just go through it A through Z. I mean, there would be 100 things that we cannot talk about, and I can't tell you why we can't talk about them, but everyone knows. But we're not going to talk about them. We're not going to talk about this. We're not going to. And so this is, this is just this crazy moment in time where, with the genocide kind of, coming out of the mist, becoming more and more visible, they have to just shut down all mental activity almost. And I just wanted to digress, if you don't mind, for 1 second to comment on the current situation in the Ukraine, which is related to this, in that, you know, now that Russia is taking out the Ukrainian infrastructure, you're very quickly going to come to a point where they may have to evacuate the cities. Last week, there was a lot of scuttlebutt that this is actually being analyzed. And I just wanted to point out, Tim, that this is a life and death decision for, say, someone in Kyiv, because, you know, the track record of these people with these internment camps is not good. I mean, look at Camp Irene, look at the German soldiers after World War II. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of a death and high body count, in my opinion, that would come out of these camps. So if you're going to go in, just have a you know, clear mind about what that, how profound that decision is. I would say if you can, if you have the physical capacity, try to figure out a place you can be where there's going to be water and food and not a lot of people trying to incarcerate you. Now, I don't know how that's going to work, though, for the Ukraine. I mean, where can these people go? You know, the borders are shut around the country. They're kind of trapped in there. And if you get into a situation where, you know, you're running short of water in Kyiv, I mean, this is just a perfect moment for Holodomor 2.0.
Well, it suggests what should be done is the government of Kyiv to come to terms with Russia, declare the Donbass independent and part of Russia, declare their neutrality between Russia and NATO, NATO and the United States to give Russia a security guarantee and open up commerce again between Russia and Germany. But then again, if you do that, you get peace. And if you have peace, you can't have Anglo-American desire dominance of the global system, which is what this is really all about, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's why it's never, that's the one thing that isn't going to happen. So, you know, we talked about this, I think, 8 months ago, where the war was just going to drag on. It would never stop. It would provide greater and greater rationale for sanctions. And what they're going to do is they're going to point out that the genocide that's going to be taking place of the Ukrainian people is rationale to have ever increasing sanctions, right? I mean, we just have to shut down all, you know, exports of any kind of food or energy from Russia because they're just the embodiment of evil. So it's the whole thing is just a very sophisticated rationale for depopulation, and it's just adding on to the the clever rationale for depopulation that the vaccine has created.
Yeah, I saw a scene. Apparently, Germany is being deforested because they're using what they call biofuels.
Yeah,
and now they're going to have to resort to coal because they scrap nuclear, and of course, scrapping nuclear led them to the arms of Russia with the natural gas as a substitute, and that became a problem because Germany was being too commercially or economically integrated into Russia, which undermines a whole century of Anglo-American Zionist strategy, which is, you know, keep Germany down, Americans in and Russia out. And that was the whole strategy. That's why we got the 30 Years' War that we call the First World War and the Second World War. I know the historiography most people are given is simply, it's a sort of a moralistic fairy tale about, you know, Prussian or German aggression and these things. And Western liberty in these things. Of course, nothing's ever that simple. You know, as Norm Macdonald, the late comedian, pointed out, is you listen to history, you would think the good guys always win. And he would say, what are the odds of that happening?
Yeah, I know. And I'm glad that you know, it is the case that World War I, World War II are simply one political process. And that's an important point because it shows, since there was no rationale that has ever been discovered for the beginning of the First World War, right? Mm-hmm. It's just completely incoherent. So they use the second phase and Hitler as saying, look, this was rational and we had to kill all these Europeans because of Hitler. He was bad. I mean, it's the same thing now with Putin. But the fact is, you just look at the rationale for World War I and you can see, no, this is just a Masonic project. They control the political class on both sides of the trench. And they're just using this as a way to reduce European population. This is the same thing that's going on, well, all over the world at this point, at this very moment in time, Tim. And I hate to say we're looking at a pretty rough winter. I just don't understand how they are going to have anything other than enormous mortality rates in Central Europe and in the Ukraine. And, you know, they've got all the rationale in place to confuse people as to the cause of it, but none of it will really actually stand any scrutiny. We're just in the middle of depopulation. That's it.
So, Chris, this time next week, the elections will be over, and of course, we'll be in the middle of a huge controversy. No.
The election will have been.
Yeah, apparently they can't pull off an election in one night anymore. And then the 20th century paper ballots able to do that. Now they can't do that anymore with all the high tech they have. It's become normalized, you know, to extend these things out so they can furnish the votes they need. My feeling is that with an off-year election, they won't be able to get out the vote to cover up the corruption. And if it is anything approaching a fair election, the Republicans are probably going to take the Senate and the House. Also, those key governor races. Whether or not that matters, you know, whether it'll mean anything politically, that's a whole other story. I'm skeptical, of course, but there's going to be a reaction to all the misgovernance the past 2 years, as it should. But we do have this odd thing where Joe Biden went to Union Station, a very ornate train station in Washington, D.C., which is now surrounded by homeless encampments and derelicts. Yeah. That's 2 years. But he said, Biden said, we want Americans to vote. We want every American's voice to be heard. Now we have to move the process forward. We know that more and more ballots are cast in early voting or by mail in America. Isn't that great? We now know that many states don't start counting those ballots until after the polls close on November 8th. So that's how they know how many votes they need to manufacture. That means in some cases, we won't know the winner of the election for a few days until a few days after the election. It takes time to count all of the legitimate ballots in a legal and orderly manner. It used to not, though. I mean, it's always been important for citizens and democracy to be well informed and engaged. Of course, misinformed, according to make sure they don't get misinformation according to DHS, right? Now it's important for citizens to be patient as well. That's how it's supposed to work. Really? It's supposed to last days? What?
Yeah, I know. Unbelievable. That's because of the invention of the computer.
Now it lasts days.
Yeah. Well, you know,
they're normalizing all the election, you know, confusion.
Yeah, I mean, I would be amazed if there isn't just, you know, dozens of you know, of overt theft of different elections. I mean, it's.
Are they preparing us for this? I mean,
yeah, of course. But the point is, you still need to go out and vote because the down ballot
yes.
stuff is so critical, because that's what's going to protect communities of you know, righteous individuals. It's going to be the sheriffs, the board of supervisors. I mean, this is really. We have to build democracy. It doesn't exist. We're in an oligarchy. We can't start the project at the presidency or some. These are just titular, you know, kind of positions. Anyway, at this point, we have to start to build democracy on a local level. That's what we have available, and that's the only way we can get this.
Well,
done.
That's only time so it ever that works. Means dog
yeah, that's how it's got to work like that. So it's got to be dog catcher. It's got to be. You know, the sheriff is essential. I mean, it's a board of supervisors, mayor. This is where we have to be focusing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would love to see, you know, a protest of the following form where there is a complete turnout that elects all down ballot individuals who are righteous, and nobody, absolutely nobody votes for the top people. There are no votes for president or Senate or any of that stuff, because we really have to build. I mean, we have to start ignoring the best we can the mind control that comes out of those offices, and start building democracy from, you know, from the bottom up. And so that's why this election I'm really interested in. In fact, I'm more interested in this election than I've been in a long time, because, you know, when they cold cock the American people with like the transgender agenda. Mm-hmm. It really caught a lot of people the wrong way. And I'm hoping that this will be reflected in the down ballot, you know, election, you know, just in every aspect, try to find the most sane individual and promote them, you know?
Yeah. Well, they're saying, I think Republicans are polling over 20% with blacks right now. And
yeah.
Over 40% for Hispanics. So there's sort of this plan from the Democrats to, you know, to bring in more people of color may not be working. Now, a lot of has been said throughout the years about increasing support of Blacks for, you know, outside the Democratic Party. Usually you get 90-10, 95-5. I think Trump got as many as 12% with Blacks, whereas usually Republicans are in single digits, Republican presidential candidates. But if it gets anything close to 20%, and you have also what you've had, all this craziness with the CRT stuff, is a forging of white identity in the country, and you get a block of white, a supermajority of whites voting for Republican, it could be an electoral massacre for the Democrats if the elections are held free. But this is what they mean by, when they say democracy, and Tucker Carlson made this point on a show about this, democracy, it's not about the process of free voting and its role in selecting leaders in our constitutional system. It's not about the give and take where the party, people are alienated with the incumbent party, so they put in the alternative party or another party. For Biden and for, of course, not him, it's his handlers and all that, the left, democracy is about lifestyle liberalism. It's about transgenderism, gay rights, you know, these things. And it's not about, again, it's about having elections go their way. If it doesn't go their way, then it's not democratic. That's what you can see. That's when they say democracy is on the ballot itself. Well, it's not. Like I said, it's people's names are on the candidates. But they're, to them, if you don't support transgender story hour, drag queen story hour, transgender reassignment surgery for fourth graders, gay rights, and grooming of kids in schools and these things, then you're not democratic. And that's how they look at it.
Give you a little demographic bonbon. I can't remember or give you the citation, but it was an article I read last week. And it said that the biggest demographic shift, and they were all of the different categories were shifting red. In other words, there were going to be more Republican votes in the Blacks, more Republican votes in the Latinos than before. But the biggest shift was in suburban white females. And they are really drifting red dramatically. And
because they go shopping?
Yeah. Well, they can see inflation. They can also see the public school system. Mm-hmm. And so they are, I think, realizing that at the top, the Democratic Party is, satanic would be a term that would come to my mind.
Talk about being tone deaf. We talked about last week, the White House had that transgender character interview the president.
Yeah.
And people will watch that and go, this is what the White House is concerning itself with when we have, when Biden himself was threatening nuclear Armageddon. The economy is disintegrating, crime. Actually, now they're claiming that the crime wave is just a figment of everyone's imagination. It's a talking point.
Right.
Not really happening.
That's right.
Nor is inflation, by the way.
Not a problem. Just take a walk, from any mall in South Central Chicago, and you won't have to worry about crime.
And the idiot Jory Reid on MSNBC claimed that inflation, that's just a talking point. Not many Americans talk about inflation. It's one of these big academic words. What is he talking about? It's not a difficult word, right? I remember inflation, learning about it in the 70s when I was a child, because the inflationary 70s. So it's been on the people's tongues for a long time and a concern. That's why the government bothers to suppress the inflation rate, because they know people worry about it. You can't hide it. But it's this odd argument that somehow the problems that are afflicting the country are just right-wing talking points, a cover for racism, crime, price of things. And although a good segment of, say, the black population may be tricked by that, a good section of it will not be tricked by it, and they will be alienated, and they may vote 5-7% more for the other side. Again, given the Democratic, sort of their coalition strategy, that is a disaster for them. If you get white cohesion and you get a good portion of people of color changing sides, whether it's a 5, 10, 12%, whatever shift, it matters a lot in these places. If elections are free.
Return. I mean, when Jory Reid talks nonsense like that, I mean, how many of the suburban white females that are transitioning from blue to red are going to be swayed by that?
Yeah.
Right? Zero. So how many of the people who are like on the fence and trying to worried about the country will look at that and go, I don't know. She seems like she's nuts to me. And this will actually move people in the other direction. So this is the only people who would buy into her comments are the brain dead, you know, the ones that are absolutely have no neurologic activity whenever any kind of political, you know, discussion or video comes on. They are just locked into a worldview of Democrat good, you know. So
yeah.
Just let her talk. It's fine. It does nothing. And in fact, I think actually incrementally it's pushing people into that's why they talk about Christian nationalism now, right? Mm-hmm. And this is just another term to denigrate the shift that is occurring, because really what is happening is people are wanting to move toward a sane kind of European based culture like we used to have in the 1950s, yeah, as opposed to the trend transgender.
Well, yeah, health. We had de facto Christian nationalism before 1965.
Yeah, exactly.
Christian nationalism is as crazy as Jewish nationalism. Oh, wait a second.
Right, right. I mean, so it's just the people are all going who are mentally capable are all moving in the right direction. Every single person I know who can think at all, regardless of where they were politically 10 years ago, are seeing that there is a kind of weird, inexplicable Satanism that seems to be in back of a lot of the forces driving the Democratic Party. They're seeing it. It's just,
yeah.
And I think even like the Ukraine situation is another, you know, sort of like transgenderism, the response of the U.S. to lead us into an actual conflict with Russia over this impossible to understand for the ordinary person situation in Eastern Ukraine, it isn't going to sway anybody. No one is going to buy in that is free is going to buy into this. There is going to be a reaction against it. It's going to be something that people are going to realize is indicative that the political class that we have just can't be trusted, period. And hopefully eventually it'll lead to the effect that we just discussed about we got to get at the local political level, because that's where we can change things, start to change things.
So let's say they get shellacked, Republicans get 55, 57 seats in the Senate, and they go up, I don't know, take the majority, 235, say 240 seats in the House, they take that. And you have Joe Biden, of course, who'd be the lamest of ducks. Do you think, what are the chances of the 25th Amendment being invoked? Shuffling them off. I mean, I think what would happen is they would have to get rid of Kamala Harris first. Get a new. This is kind of what they did with Nixon. Remember, they got rid of Spiro Agnew.
I don't think Biden is just. It's just unimaginable he'll run again. I can't imagine them putting Kamala Harris up as a candidate. So it'll be someone else. Maybe Hillary Trump one more time. But
both are close to 80 years old. Right. Well, no, that's funny. Yeah. Is that you mentioned that? Now you brought that up. Is the idea is now. Is the quality of political leadership in the United States is just how it's presented. It used to be they put up at least an air of being serious. Now they're just like stage carnies now. It's just ridiculous. It's
Trump has scheduled a press conference for the 14th. And
yes.
I'm dimes to dollars. He's going to say, the election, on Tuesday is an indication that the nation wants me, and I'm accepting this mandate, and I'm going to run again, and I think the day after maybe Hillary will come out, but this is just a clown world. I honestly think fair-minded people are going to see right through that and start forgetting about what the propagandists that control the political class do is just less and less relevant. I'm really more worried about if the Democrats have a huge shellacking, which would occur, I think, in a free election process, that this will force a real extreme Ukrainian kind of distraction event to make people want to rally around the flags and just support Biden, keep him in office for another couple of years.
There's a good 70%. I mean, I think the public are like, what, Ukraine? There's the enthusiasm isn't there for it.
Well, imagine if they start putting like the people in Kyiv into internment camps on the border.
Yeah.
how are they going to spin that we're winning? You know, I mean, it's just, you know, we spent what, $60 billion or something. I mean, what that'll do is create this rationale for the coalition of the willing. You know, we've got to go in. We have to.
There'll be photographs of people in barbed wire or something, even though it's the Ukrainians doing it.
And they'll spin it like we have to protect the Ukrainian. Look what's happening to them. This is Putin's fault. We've got to stand up to him. It's you know, the appeasement. We don't want to go into the Chamberlain, you know, syndrome. We have to stand up to Putin. Let's send in the 101. They just happen to be right on the border, you know, another whatever. And the war can just go on, ever more, European body count, never being able to be resolved because the political class doesn't want to resolve. They want it to go on, and it will go on. It's going to go on until the political class is changed. And even if it's not in the Ukraine, it's going to be somewhere else. But, you know, I also, before we, you know, started recording, I was mentioning that the data on the vaccine damage is just getting, you know, I mean, just so impossible to ignore, that they're just going to have to come up with one explosive distraction after another. Right now we have the election and the fallout, but I think shortly after that, you know, we could get into kind of a World War III situation where you get, you know, the US and Russia fighting. You know, you could even have a dirty bomb, you know, I mean, they've been talking about that, mm-hmm. As just a way to, you know, as an ultimate distraction, you know, that would just be a very low yield nuclear device that, could be cobbled together, you know, purportedly by the Ukraine, and they could blame it on Russia. And then, you know, now everything is so serious that, democracy has to be suspended, Facebook.
Well, they can just claim it went off, and then anyone questioning misinformation.
Exactly.
DHS work with Facebook and Twitter and and all the other big tech companies, Google, to suppress information, doubting the story. That's how it works. So, okay, Joe.